cgsf.ca/donate.
Rise with us. CJSF's Fund Drive is your chance to fuel community radio. Give now at cjsffunddrive.ca or text DONATE to 778-782-2573.
Hi, I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. From New York, this is Democracy Now! Okay.
This program is a blessing. It's a very blessing to know that they are helping us and helping our kids and helping us to be able to feed our children when we don't have jobs right now.
Just hours before some 42 million people lost food benefits in what could be the longest government shutdown in U.S. history, President Trump held a lavish Great Gatsby Halloween party at Mar-a-Lago. We'll speak with the head of the International F. Scott Fitzgerald Society about the Great Gatsby, a book about unaccountable power and cruelty. But first to Mariana Chilton, author of The Painful Truth About Hunger in America. Next, tomorrow is Election Day. We'll bring you a report on the South Asian grassroots movement that's helped fuel Zohran Mamdani's historic run for mayor here in New York City.
From the get-go, our communities were going to be a big part of his base.
Just 24/7, they're thinking how to win. They are not only just volunteers. They built, actually, movement.
I think the fact that the campaign spoke to the very material issues of working-class people as first and foremost has really made a very significant difference.
Then President Trump threatens to bomb Africa's most populous country, Nigeria, accusing the government of failing to protect Christians. We'll speak with the acclaimed Nigerian writer Wole Soyinka, the winner of the Nobel Prize for Literature, who was denied a visa into the United States by the Trump administration. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. The U.S. federal government shutdown has entered its 34th day. Two federal judges ruled Friday the Department of Agriculture must partially disperse funds for SNAP, the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, and ordered the Trump administration to provide an update by today. Food banks and nonprofits nationwide are scrambling to meet the needs of 42 million Americans, including 16 million children, whose SNAP benefits were cut off over the weekend. On Friday, President Trump held a lavish Great Gatsby-themed Halloween party at Mar-a-Lago just hours before tens of millions of people lost SNAP benefits. Democratic Senator Chris Murphy wrote on social media, quote, "The way he rubs his inhumanity in Americans' face never ceases to stun me. He's illegally refusing to pay food stamp benefits while he throws a ridiculously over-the-top Gatsby party for his right-wing millionaire and corporate friends," unquote. We'll have more on the Great Gatsby and what it means for today after headlines. Meanwhile, nearly 13,000 air traffic controllers are working without pay due to the shutdown. CNN reports there have been 98 staffing trigger reports at airports since Friday, meaning air traffic controllers had to alter operations due to staff shortages. Israel's continuing to carry out attacks in Gaza, shelling eastern areas of Deir al-Balah and the Nusayrat refugee camp. Israel's killed at least 226 Palestinians since the U.S.-backed ceasefire went into effect October 10th. Officials in Gaza have accused Israel of also violating the ceasefire by allowing into Gaza just 24% of the aid trucks promised under the deal. On Sunday, Hamas returned the bodies of three more Israeli soldiers who were killed during the October 7th attack. In the occupied West Bank, Israeli forces and settlers killed two Palestinians earlier today. Israel also detained at least 15 Palestinians in overnight raids. On Friday, mourners gathered near Ramallah for the funeral of 15-year-old Yamin Samad Hamed, who was killed in an Israeli raid. This is Leila Ghanem, the governor of Ramallah.
The genocide continues not only in Gaza, but in all of Palestine, because they want to say to all the world, we are in control. We occupy all the world, not only Palestine. There are daily executions. This is a child who was executed like our children, our women, our elders were executed in cold blood because those who do not fear punishment will misbehave. The world should take a stand.
The former top lawyer for the Israeli military has been arrested for her role in the leak of surveillance video that showed Israeli soldiers gang raping a Palestinian prisoner at the Sde Tayman prison last year. The military lawyer, Major General Ifat Tomer Yerushalmi, was arrested after being reported missing on Sunday. She resigned last week. Five of the Israeli soldiers seen in the video were criminally prosecuted. At the time, Israeli Finance Minister Bezalel Smotrich said the soldiers should be treated like heroes, not villains, unquote. Israel's threatening to step up its attacks on Lebanon. Earlier today, Israeli Defense Minister Israel Katz accused the Lebanese government of delaying efforts to dismantle Hezbollah. Overnight, Israeli drone strikes killed four people in southern Lebanon. On Saturday, the U.S. bombed another boat in the Caribbean, killing at least three people. Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth claimed the boat was carrying drugs, but once again offered no proof. The U.S. has now bombed 15 boats, killing at least 64 people over the past 2 months. U.N. Human Rights Chief Volker Turk has denounced the U.S. attacks. Turk's spokesperson Ravina Shamdasani spoke Friday.
These attacks and their mounting human cost are unacceptable. The U.S. must halt such attacks and take all measures necessary to prevent the extrajudicial killing of people aboard these boats, whatever the criminal conduct alleged against them.
In related news, The Washington Post reports the Justice Department has told lawmakers that the War Powers Resolution does not apply to the boat strikes because U.S. service members have not been put in harm's way. Former State Department lawyer Brian Finucane told The Washington Post, quote, it's a wild claim of executive authority, unquote. This comes as the U.S. continues to amass more ships and aircraft near Venezuela. During an interview on 60 Minutes, CBS's Nora O'Donnell questioned President Trump about Venezuela.
On Venezuela in particular, are Maduro's days as president numbered?
I would say, yeah. I think so, yeah.
And this issue of potential land strikes in Venezuela, is that true?
I don't tell you that. I mean, I'm not saying it's true or untrue.
President Trump is threatening military intervention in Nigeria, accusing the government of failing to protect Christians. In a post on Truth Social, Trump wrote in part, quote, the USA will immediately stop all aid and assistance Nigeria, and may very well go into that now disgraced country, guns a-blazing. If we attack, it'll be fast, vicious, and sweet, just like the terrorist thugs attack our cherished Christians, he said. Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth replied to the post by writing, yes, sir, unquote. Speaking to reporters yesterday aboard his plane, President Trump again vowed to take action in Nigeria.
They're killing record numbers of Christians in Nigeria. And they have other countries very bad also. You know that. That part of the world very bad. They're killing the Christians and killing them in very large numbers. We're not going to allow that to happen.
But organizations monitoring violence in the region say there's no evidence to suggest Christians are killed more than other religious groups in Nigeria. This is Malik Samuel, a senior researcher at Good Governance Africa.
This is not a Christian genocide because the facts don't support it. If you look at the areas where this conflict is rife, even if you take Borno State alone, you look at the northern Borno, many of these communities are Muslim dominated. So most of the victims of Boko Haram violence are Muslims.
Later in the broadcast, we'll speak with the Nobel Literature Prize winning Nigerian writer Wole Soyinka. He was just recently denied a visa back into the United States. The head of the Red Cross says history is repeating itself in Sudan's Darfur region after reports of mass killings by the Rapid Support Forces, RSF paramilitary group, in the city of El-Fasher. It comes as Sudan's government says the RSF has killed at least 2,000 people since the paramilitary group has seized control of El-Fasher. But witnesses say the death toll could be much higher as tens of thousands of civilians remain trapped in the city. The mayor of Evanston, Illinois, has opened two investigations into the actions of federal immigration agents. On Friday, one agent was filmed repeatedly punching a man in the head while he was pinned to the pavement. Moments earlier, an agent pointed a gun at a group of bystanders.
Out of here! Put the gun away! We gotta shoot people!
Evanston Mayor Daniel Bliss denounced the federal agents.
ICE agents have assaulted Evanston residents, beaten people up, grabbed them, abducted them, taking people off the street once again because of the color of their skin. It is an outrage. Our message for ICE is simple. Get the hell out of Evanston.
On 60 Minutes, CBS's Nora O'Donnell questioned President Trump about federal immigration agents using violent tactics.
More recently, Americans have been watching videos of ICE tackling a young mother, tear gas being used in a Chicago residential neighborhood, and the smashing of car windows. Have some of these raids gone too far?
No, I think they haven't gone far enough because we've been held back by the judges, by the liberal judges that were put in by Biden and by Obama.
You're okay with those tactics?
Yeah, because you have to get the people out.
Trump's popularity ratings are at an all-time low. A mayor in Mexico was shot and killed in a crowded plaza during Day of the Dead celebrations on Saturday. Carlos Alberto Manzo Rodriguez, the mayor of Urupuan in the western state of Michoacan, had been an outspoken critic of drug cartels and organized crime. And the United Nations Security Council has adopted a U.S.-backed resolution supporting Morocco's autonomy plan for Western Sahara as the basis for negotiations in the territory's political future. Morocco's occupied Western Sahara for half a century. 10 countries joined the United States in supporting the measure. Russia, China, and Pakistan abstained. Algeria did not cast a vote. The Polisario Front, the Sahrawi liberation movement seeking independence, denounced the vote, saying it would not take part in, quote, any peace process or negotiations based on proposals that aim to legitimize the Moroccan military occupation, unquote. To see our coverage of Western Sahara over the years, go to democracynow.org. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. The U.S. federal government shutdown has entered its 34th day. Two federal judges ruled Friday the Department of Agriculture must partially disperse funds for SNAP, that's the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, and ordered the Trump administration to provide an update by today. Food banks and nonprofits nationwide are scrambling to meet the needs of 42 million people whose SNAP benefits were cut off over the weekend, including an estimated 16 million children. This all comes as President Trump held a lavish Great Gatsby Halloween party at Mar-a-Lago just hours before the tens of millions of people lost SNAP benefits, which we'll talk more about in a minute. But first, we're joined by Mariana Chilton, professor of practice in the Department of Nutrition at the School of Public Health and Health Sciences at the University of Massachusetts Amherst. She's a nationally recognized leader in child hunger in America, author of The Painful Truth About Hunger in America. Welcome to Democracy Now!, Professor Chilton. If you can start off by talking about what tens of millions of people in this country face today, and particularly the 16 million children who've lost their SNAP benefits. What does this mean?
It means that we are headed for a public health and an economic crisis. It's important to remember who participates in SNAP and what SNAP actually achieves. First of all, SNAP supports 90% of the people who are on SNAP benefits are American citizens. And the rest 10% are immigrants who are here legally and who have been here for over 5 years. The vast majority of SNAP participants are children and working parents and the elderly and the disabled, veterans, and active duty military. So this affects all different types of people in our society, and it's going to be devastating if the Trump administration refuses to disperse the SNAP benefit dollars that are there. It's important to remember that SNAP does three things. First of all, it prevents hunger. SNAP was created to prevent malnutrition and children dying of starvation. Back in the 60s, pediatricians and nurses were discovering that children were dying of starvation and that pregnant moms were losing their children or giving birth to preterm babies. And they worked with members of Congress to develop the modern SNAP program. And thanks to SNAP, we do not have children dying of hunger. Secondly, it promotes health and well-being of children. It keeps them out of the hospital. It actually also helps them to stay in school, and it helps them with their school performance in math and reading. Thirdly, SNAP stimulates the economy. For every $1 that's spent on SNAP benefits, $1.50 to $1.80 is stimulated in local economies. So if we don't get SNAP back and running, up and running, we are really headed for a major public health and economic crisis.
So you have these two judges who said by Wednesday SNAP benefits must be fully returned. What does it mean to say the money for SNAP is going to run out? You also have President Trump saying food stamp benefits paid in November will unfortunately be delayed.
The Trump administration is currently breaking the law. SNAP is an entitlement program, and it is written into statute that no matter what is happening in Congress, even if Congress is shut down, there are contingency funds to ensure that no one goes hungry in America. SNAP is a fantastic public assistance program. It's one that people look to around the world as the most effective public assistance program that prevents hunger, and it was built to withstand any kind of political footballing or crisis, and it is meant to respond to all kinds of economic downturns, whether that's a national economic downturn or when families are falling onto hard times. So the fact that the Trump administration is withholding this money, they are actively breaking the law and they are denying people the right to food.
This all comes as the Trump administration announced it's ending the U.S. annual report on food insecurity and hunger in America. How important is this report, Professor Chilton?
Well, this report is based on years and years of data collection. The food security measure has been in operation for more than 25 years, and it was developed by scientists and social workers who were discovering food insecurity and hunger in their communities, and they developed a measure to look at that. And that was the way that we could see how well SNAP and other nutrition assistance programs like school breakfast and lunch and the WIC program, which funds food for pregnant and lactating mothers and young children under the age of 5. It was a way for us to see how well our programs were working at preventing hunger. So it's an extremely important measure based on scientific expertise, and it has withstood multiple rounds of scientific investigation, poking at it from all sides, and it has withstood all types of peer review. So the fact that the U.S. government is no longer utilizing that measure or not allowing those numbers to be released should be deeply concerning at the same time that they're withholding funds from SNAP. SNAP is really a way it helps to hold up our democracy. It is an entitlement program, again, and it's really important to think about why it is that they're doing this. They are actively trying to cause harm and chaos to the American people. And this is something that I talk about in my book, is the experience of disrespect, the experience of violence and discrimination. Those are at the root of food insecurity and hunger. And right now, the Trump administration is giving us a master class in how to generate more hunger in our society. This is why SNAP needs to be continued and released. Another thing that's really important to remember is that SNAP supplements wages. And the reason that we have SNAP in the first place is that when people are working, they're not making enough money because employers like Amazon and Walmart are refusing to pay living wages. So let's really not just focus on the Trump administration, but let's look at giant employers and see what it is that they can do to ensure that there's a living wage where people do not have to participate in SNAP and do not have to rely on Medicaid. There's no one I've met in the 25 years that I've been working on food insecurity that is wants to be on the SNAP program. They want to make a living wage and feed their families and their communities in a way that is dignified and respectful and that actually builds solidarity. Something that's so important to remember is that the way you build democracy is to make sure that everyone has healthy and nutritious food on the table.
And let's remember that the Democrats are saying that they will not agree to ending the government shutdown unless the Republicans agree to SNAP and health care. And this weekend, many people learned their out-of-pocket costs for Obamacare will go up over 100% on average, 26%, and also enhanced tax credits expiring. The significance of losing health care, because if you can't pay for it, you lose it, and losing food assistance. We have 30 seconds.
Remember that food assistance promotes health and well-being. So if you're cutting SNAP benefits, you're going to make people sicker, more likely to miss jobs, more likely to miss school. Parents are less likely to be able to show up to work, and they're going to be not as healthy. Without health insurance, it's going to cause a major cascade effect. It will be a public health crisis without SNAP benefits and Medicaid benefits. And we really need to focus in on employers paying a living wage.
Professor Mariana Chilton, I thank you so much for being with us. Professor of Practice in the Department of Nutrition and School of Public Health and Health Sciences at the University of Massachusetts Amherst. Author of The Painful Truth About Hunger in America. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman. On Friday, President Trump held a lavish Great Gatsby Halloween party at Mar-a-Lago just hours before the estimated 42 million people lost SNAP benefits. Democratic Senator Chris Murphy wrote on social media, "The way he rubs his inhumanity in Americans' face never ceases to stun me. He's illegally refusing to pay food stamp benefits while he throws a ridiculously over-the-top Gatsby party for his right-wing millionaire and corporate friends," end quote. In a piece for the Financial Times headlined, "How Gatsby Foretold Trump's America," the University of London literature professor Sarah Churchwell writes, quote, "The novel's prescience lies not in foretelling specific events, but in diagnosing a culture where power enjoys impunity and cruelty rubs out its traces. A society run by careless people, the unheeding brutality of so-called world builders has returned most recently in the dark fantasies of Trumpism and in Silicon Valley's fatuous motto, move fast and break things," she wrote. For more, we go to Montgomery, Alabama, where we're joined by Kirk Kernett, professor and chair of the English department at Troy University. Montgomery is where Zelda Fitzgerald was born. The professor teaches F. Scott Fitzgerald, the Great Gatsby, served on the board of the Scott and Zelda Fitzgerald Museum in Montgomery, now executive director of the International F. Scott Fitzgerald Society. We thank you so much for being with us. Professor Kirk Kernett, as you saw this party play out in Mar-a-Lago, as millions could literally move into hunger in America, your thoughts, what did the Great Gatsby, F. Scott Fitzgerald, teach us about the times then and perhaps a warning about the times today?
Well, I think it's fair to say that those of us who have spent our careers studying F. Scott Fitzgerald were horrified and sort of felt like, Mr. President, you've ruined so much already. Why must you sully the Great Gatsby? It's really horrific optics. And it really perpetuates, I think, a misreading of the Great Gatsby that troubles many of us. Gatsby is sort of famous for its lavish party scenes, but I think what people often miss is that the entire thrust of the book is to critique that conspicuous consumption and the wastage that goes on in these sorts of events where all of our values are becoming more and more tenuous.
Who in the Great Gatsby do you see personifying President Trump and why?
Well, it's very interesting because for the past 50 years, there's been a tendency to equate presidents with Jay Gatsby. It started with Richard Nixon, believe it or not, in part because the 1974 movie was going on during Watergate. And it usually refers to people who come outside, the outsider, Bill Clinton, Barack Obama. But with Donald Trump, I think we really do have the first instance of a president who is the villain of the novel, Tom Buchanan.
And if you could talk about the fact that April was the centennial of the publication of The Great Gatsby, what do you see as the enduring message about a society run by careless people? And as you looked at Mar-a-Lago, the millionaires and billionaires around President Trump, your final thoughts?
Well, my eyes kind of went to the servers and the people that are working this sort of extravagant party. And they're in the background of Gatsby, too. I see a huge difference because the people that attended Gatsby's parties were not necessarily rich people. They tended to be people that were interested or sort of drawn to the exuberance of life. And in many ways, they're not unlike Gatsby. So it was a sort of a taste of a life that they probably weren't ever going to get in the real workaday world. When I look at Trump's Mar-a-Lago, it seems something right out of the Satyricon, which is a story that Fitzgerald drew from as he was creating the novel. So it really, there's no irony or no self-critique there as this spectacle is going on, and it just demonstrates again that a lot of our great literature can be used for spurious purposes.
Kirk Carnot, I want to thank you for being with us, Chair of the English Department at Troy University, Executive Director of the International F. Scott Fitzgerald Society, joining us from Montgomery, Alabama, the birthplace of Zelda Fitzgerald, the wife of the author F. Scott Fitzgerald. When we come back, tomorrow's Election Day, we'll bring you a report on the South Asian grassroots movement that's helping fuel Zoran Mamdani's historic run for mayor here in New York. Back in 20 seconds. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman. Today is Election Day all over the country. Early voting just ended in New York's mayoral race this weekend. With 735,000 ballots cast, it's the highest early voter turnout in New York's history for a non-presidential race, something like four times the number of people who usually vote in early voting. As the three candidates for mayor, Democratic nominee Zoran Mamdani, former New York Governor Andrew Cuomo, and Republican nominee Curtis Sliwa closed out their campaigns, President Trump told 60 Minutes he's not a fan of Cuomo, but would pick him over Mamdani, who he called a communist. Meanwhile, the New York Times reports former President Obama told Mamdani in a private phone conversation Saturday his campaign had been impressive and offered to be a sounding board. I should clarify, Tuesday, not today, is Election Day. Zoran Mamdani's mayoral campaign has energized communities across New York City in unprecedented ways, mobilizing nearly 100,000 volunteers for his campaign. Democracy Now!'s Anjali Kamat has been following a crucial, often overlooked portion of Mamdani's base, working-class South Asians.
It's Friday afternoon in a quiet neighborhood in Kensington, Brooklyn. These women are members of Drumbeats, an advocacy group for low-income South Asian and Indo-Caribbean communities here in New York. and they're getting ready to canvass for Zohran Mamdani.
So half of the list is going to cover with them, then they will find them.
Gulab again.
Black Panther, Gulab.
They split up into groups, and I followed them as they knocked on dozens of doors. Armed with colorful flyers about the campaign in Bengali and Urdu and dozens of Zohran pins, they explained why they thought Mamdani was the best candidate and reminded neighbors